Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts. Hey everyone, welcome to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian American and Asian authors. We are your hosts. I'm Marvin Yu.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And welcome back to our first book club podcast of 2017. It's a whole new world. And actually, this book actually is pretty timely. This month we're reading, or this month we read, Something in Between by Melissa De La Cruz. Mm-hmm.
It got real.
Yeah. You're like a prophetic choice by Rira Yu.
Well, like, I knew that we were going to read this in January, and I knew that immigration has always been like a hot topic in politics. Mm-hmm. So I kind of figured that it might be timely. I just didn't know how timely it would be.
Yeah. I mean, we just had our LA meetup and discussion. We tried some Google Hangout to bring in some people from outside the city. And I think next month we're going to try to do a dedicated Google Hangout for people who want to phone in and talk about the book.
Yeah.
Before recording the podcast. But it just so happened that this meetup occurred a day after. The immigration executive order signed by our new president.
Yeah, so, and like the whole protest at JFK that happened yesterday.
Yeah, LAX today.
LAX today.
Yeah. Crazy. So, yeah, the book is Something in Between by Melissa De La Cruz. I don't have the book jacket.
Wait, let me get it because I got the Kindle version, so I don't have the back.
I got the hardcover because it's only available in hardcover right now, and I don't really like. When I'm reading hardcover books, I don't like dealing with the book jacket.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, so I took it off.
Let me just find it. Jasmine De Los Santos has always done what's expected of her. Pretty and popular, she studied hard, made her Filipino immigrant parents proud, and is ready to reap the rewards from the form of a full college scholarship. And then everything shatters. A National Scholar Award invitation compels her parents to reveal the truth. Their visas expired years ago. Her entire family is illegal. That means no scholarships, maybe no college at all, and that very real threat of deportation. For the first time, Jasmine rebels, trying all those teen things that she never had time for in the past. Even as she's trying to make sense of her new world, it's turned upside down by Royce Blakely, the charming son of a high-ranking congressman. Jasmine no longer has any idea where or if she fits into the American dream. All she knows is that she's not giving up, because when the rules you live by no longer apply, the only thing to do is to make up your own. And it's published by Harlequin Teen.
Cool. So for those of you tuning in who haven't read the book yet and don't want things to get spoiled, you really should be listening to this after you finish reading the book. But we're going to give you like a 5-second...
No, not even. We're just going to jump into it. All right. Just pause.
Make sure you read the book before... Or not. I mean, if you just want to hear us talk about it, that's cool too. I think this is our first modern...
Contemporary
book.
Yeah. I mean, like, Heroine Complex technically falls under contemporary, but I think because it's urban fantasy, it's kind of... different. So
yeah, and this is our first, I guess, YA novel, if you want to call that like a genre. I guess Heroine Complex is kind of YA, but
no, it's new adult. That's new different adult?
Oh
yeah.
NA new,
yeah NA,
NA. But yeah, I guess we should start with our initial impressions.
Yeah.
So for me, I kind of feel like this book wasn't meant for people like me. I can see if I was like a younger version of myself, I might be more like super into it. It's definitely a YA book.
Yeah, it's definitely yeah. meant for a younger audience. Like I had that trouble too, where I'm like, I'm in my 20s and I was once a teenage girl, but I'm not that person anymore. So it's very hard for me to connect, but...
Yeah, but it was fun to read. A little frustrating at times because you're in the mind... It's first-person narrative, so you're in the mind of this 18-year-old girl who is going through a rough time, which is interesting. And what I really liked about the book is that characters like Jasmine, the main character... You don't see that often in media in general, especially with this narrative where because, you know, media or rhetoric has always painted like illegal immigrants as like a pejorative, like something to fear or look down on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is a story of an undocumented family. And she makes a point to like say she doesn't like saying illegal. They're undocumented because
illegal makes her feel like a criminal and she hasn't done anything yeah. wrong necessarily. So,
and this is really a story about, I guess, from Obama land, like the dreamers, mm-hmm. like kids who are brought here to the States with their family. And, you know, for whatever reasons, visas don't come through, visas expire, things don't work out the way the family intends. Mm-hmm. But they end up staying as undocumented.
Immigrants, yeah.
Immigrants.
I mean, it was interesting for, like, I read books by, like, about undocumented immigrants, but it was the first time I was reading it from the perspective of, like, of a teenage girl and a Filipina at that, because I've never read a book with a Filipina protagonist. Mm. So I was really interested in a lot of the culture stuff that was happening. I was like, oh, like, this is how a Filipino family is like, and like very different from Korean American families. And
yeah, and we had a couple Filipino book club members with us at our meetup, and mm-hmm. they confirmed that while it was maybe a little exaggerated, it is familiar.
Yes, familiar.
Yeah, which was cool.
Shall we get to character analysis? I guess.
Sure.
Like, let's start with the protagonist, Jasmine.
So she's the first chapter is about her being like not even all American girl, but like typical Asian American overachiever who's also like a cheerleader. Like she wants to be the best at everything. She wants to win nationals for cheerleading. She wants to get into the best schools.
Yeah, very type A, very yeah. focused. I mean, like, the book pretty much jumps right into the main conflict within, like, the first two chapters.
Right. So she receives the National Scholar Award, which is the, I guess, the book version of
the National Merit
Scholarship, yeah. Which comes with a trip to D.C. To meet the president and a free ride to wherever school she wants to go to. Mm-hmm. And that triggers... her parents to reveal to her their situation, which is
they're
undocumented. Yeah. Yeah. I guess they were meant to come and work for a family member who was going to get them work visas, which provides a path to green card. But then the family member passed away or?
I don't remember the exact details, but I think what happened was they did come legally, they had visas, yeah. but the business that they were working for was failing so badly.
Right.
And then once the business closed, their visas were expired and they had to find new jobs
yeah.
that would sponsor them. But unfortunately, they couldn't find any sponsors.
Right. Which is something that it led to her parents taking menial jobs
yeah.
or jobs where they can keep a low profile, which also affects her character. I remember, I think it was the first or second chapter, when she was talking about how she was planning to go to, like she wants straight A's, she wants to take advantage of all the opportunities for, she goes through, about her immigrant parents and how much they sacrifice, how much they're working, you know, menial jobs to provide her the opportunity the opportunity to chase the American dream, and that kind of drives her own competitiveness and self, you know, herself overachieverness.
I mean, like I definitely think that she has a personality where, you know, she's driven and she wants the best for herself. But I also think that her parents pushed her a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's understandable because of their situation.
Yeah.
And she's also the oldest child. And, you know, right. Once the oldest kid gets all of the opportunities, the younger siblings are able to get through the door much easily.
Yeah. And she also mentions that, like her parents are skilled workers, but they're working low-level jobs here, and that's part of the reason why, like, she wants to succeed for them, right? Of their sacrifice. Where it then turns out that they're working these low-level jobs because they don't have visas, so they take jobs where they can lay low.
Yeah.
And maybe not get found out.
I mean, obviously, when she finds out, it's quite a big shock, and she is angry, and she has like all these like mixed feelings, right? And I think she brings up a good point where she yells at her parents and tells them, like, why did you wait to tell me? Why did you wait until I got this scholarship that I can't accept anymore? Like, why did you even bother to push me to excel this much if it was all for nothing?
Yeah.
And that was the thing that we talked about at book club, and just
why would the parents do that?
Yeah, why would the parents do that?
I mean, from the parents' perspective, so her parents, I don't know if I know the mom's name is Pilar, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what the dad's name is.
I don't
remember. It's Daddy. You know, they mentioned that they didn't know that. They thought if you did well in school, you can get the scholarships. They didn't know that also required citizenship, which the National Scholars Award that she won does require citizenship. Requires social security number to redeem, because it's federal funds.
So, like, in their minds, it's just like, oh, like, America is meritocracy. Like,
yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter where you come from or if you don't have a social security number. If you are the best of the best, you're awarded opportunities.
Right.
But I guess, like, that... I guess they were, like, misinformed or they didn't do their research.
Which is... it's relatable. I mean, my parents didn't really, like, they relied on me to figure out how to get scholarship money to pay for college. They were, you know, they didn't know the system, you know, where I was the one actively looking for stuff. So I can see why they would assume that, or why it wouldn't come up until they had to. And also, I mean, seeing how it dramatically affected her. Like, I can see why they wanted to, like, if possible, not mention it, you know?
Yeah, I guess I think they found out that they were undocumented when she was going into high school. Mm-hmm. And I can understand that they may have thought, like, oh, we have time until she graduates. So maybe we'll figure something out by then. And, like, if we don't tell her then and it works out, no harm done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's... And from the parents' perspective, I mean, that's totally understandable, you know. But also, like, it didn't work.
Yeah.
And I related to Jasmine mostly because I have friends who were in the same situation as her, where they pretty much found out they were undocumented and had to figure it out. And so it's a story that I'm familiar with. And also, you know, essentially it's a story of a dreamer, right? From the Dream Act that Obama signed, which is provides children of immigrants who came to the country illegally a path to citizenship if they, you know, went to school to do the right things and, like, kind of keep their noses clean. And there's shades of that in the so a lot of the early story revolves around this Senate bill or this House bill, for immigration reform, which would provide immigrant families a path to citizenship if they are law abiding.
Yeah, if they're law-abiding and if they were in the States for a set number of years. Yeah. And if they pay a fee as well, it's like $500 per person, right? So it's it's not even like that great of a bill, to be honest. And it gets killed in the end. So.
So for the first half of the book, they were holding on hope that this bill would pass, which would provide them or her a path to, you know, gain a scholarship and, you know, gain citizenship. It doesn't. And then that further drives her into despair. And if we're talking about Jasmine as a character, we should also talk about her arc, right?
Yeah.
And then I think a lot of her character arc has to do with the other side of the something in between story, which is the romance.
Yeah, the romance plays a really big part in the narrative, more than I would like for it to, but so I understand it's part of the I understand it's part of the genre.
I mean, it's a book for teen girls.
So. I mean, yeah, like the genre, it's romance. So like I totally understand why her relationship with Royce, the cute boy.
That's such a rich white boy name.
Oh my God. I mean, she makes fun of him for it, right? Like his distant cousins are like in a reality show called like Royce Hills or whatever. Like it seems so LA to me, but so we would have to like go back to her Filipino background where like her parents are very conservative, very like strict when it comes to having relationships. Unlike they believe in like no sex before marriage. Mm. Like if you're gonna have a boyfriend, you need to have like a chaperone, the whole shebang, right?
Yeah.
But her arc is kind of like having a life outside of school and outside of her family and trying to like rebel in this really, I think it's a really small way, to be honest, but like I guess with her character, it makes sense that it's kind of a big risk.
What's her kind of enjoying the other side of being an American teen? Yeah.
I mean,
going to parties and making out with boys.
Lots of making out with boys.
This is why when I was reading the book, because it's in first person, like I kind of felt like, oh, this is, you know, I like the story overall. And, you know, for me, when I'm reading stuff, I don't really, even if I'm not feeling it, I still, you know, want to experience, you know, once I'm committed to reading the book, especially, you know, book club, we have to. Yeah. We can't bail halfway through. But I did kind of get tired of how much she thought about Royce in the entire story.
Yeah. I had to keep reminding myself, like, she's 18.
Yeah.
I mean, she's 18 with no romantic experiences, which is why I kept like,
that's true.
I thought like, oh, she kind of reads like a 14, 15 year old. And that's like different from a mindset of an 18 year old who is getting a national scholarship. I expected her to be more mature. And she is mature in like her responsibility with her family and like dealing with the situation that's happening around her. But when it comes to romance and relationship with her,
she's a complete noob.
Yeah, she's a complete noob, and she like, and there are times where I'm like, really, you're going to like not communicate with your boyfriend over this small thing where you're like jealous. I can understand. I can give a little bit of a leeway there.
I mean, to be fair, people in their like mid-20s, late like early 30s, still do that.
They shouldn't do that. Which is why it's like understandable when you're like a teenager, but when you're a grown adult, you should definitely communicate with your partner. But
yeah, so she's, you know, going through like making all the mistakes with her boyfriend, who is Blakely, who is
the
House Majority Leader,
mm-hmm.
Who is also the key architect. Like he's pretty much Congressman Blakely is the dungeon master of the entire story, like the game master. He's like everything that happens is because of him.
Yeah,
which is
which is interesting because he like he's the one who brings up the inciting incident, and then he's the person who fixes everything at the end. And it's just like, well, would there be a story without him? Probably not. But
yeah, within this story, there is the deeper like political thriller that I wish this story was, which is like maneuvering immigration issues, personal issues, and Washington like politics. Yeah. But instead, we get a very more of a shallow description of what happens. Basically, it's, you know, what people say and what people think are two different things. And in the end, like, politics is about personal stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, this is, like, jumping way ahead, but when Jasmine runs out of options, she finally goes to the congressman, thinking right. that, like, he's not going to support her because, you know, he killed a, like, immigration reform bill that mm-hmm. she was counting on. And he's just like, yeah, sure, I can help you. Like, we can draft a private bill. And it's like, and she's just like, whoa, wait a minute. Like, why did you kill the bill that would have, like, helped me in the first place? And he's just like, my party.
Yeah, that's politics. That, this is, you know,
you're my son's girlfriend.
You're snogging my son, so we're gonna.
You're my son's girlfriend. Yeah. Like, I can help you out. Like, that's.
Yeah.
And even when she, like, goes to her deportation trial,
yeah.
like, the judge is like, where are all the letters from politicians? There's, like, nobody important.
Which seems very specific when now looking back at it. I don't know how these trials usually work.
Yeah.
But if that was such a big deal with this judge, you'd think her lawyer would have, like, prepped them, right?
Yeah, I'm surprised that the lawyer didn't, like, demand them to draft letters to.
He seemed kind of incompetent. At the same time, he had, like, a 90% success rate. I don't know. Yeah. But, okay.
Sorry, we jumped ahead.
Yeah, back to the arc of Jasmine De Los Santos. So, a big part of her arc is her coming to terms with, like, it's a coming of age story, right? So, yeah. It's like her taking her recognizing her own is there a recognizing her own flaws or her recognizing her own shortcomings and then having more self-esteem, right?
I don't know if it's really recognizing her flaws, because quite honestly, in my personal opinion, she didn't really have that many, mm-hmm. which was my problem with, like, her arc overall. I thought she should have made more mistakes.
Well,
but
yeah, I mean, more mistakes in terms of, like, panicking about her situation.
Yeah, like, panicking and, like, her.
But I think her main arc was her projecting all the time.
Right? Oh, yeah. Like, she's, like when she meets Royce's parents, she thinks that they're, like, total assholes and who are, like, racist.
Because she thinks they look down on her.
Yeah, because she's Filipina and, yeah. like, their maid is Filipina and it's just, like, she makes all of these assumptions, and really I think it's her, like, her arc, it's very much like her realizing that she doesn't deserve, like, she's not owed anything, you know, because like this entire time she thinks that because she's so smart and so talented, she deserves citizenship. She deserves, like, all the attention. But she realizes that, like, that's not the case. It's a privilege that she's had. And really, it's just, like, realizing that she's kind of been arrogant this entire time and learning how to, like, be a little bit more humble with, yeah. like, be a little bit more humble and realize, like, how lucky she is, even though she's in, like, this terrible situation. Like, she's lucky that she has, like, a very supportive family. She's lucky that she has,
like, yeah, she has support a very, network, like, at school. A very strong, like, her entire school rallies around her. This was something that bugged one of our book club members, was that, like, the entire school seemed to rally around her, where, like, if you think about it, like, she's, like, head cheerleader, like, obviously one of the, like, junior class president, one of the most popular girls. Like, there was probably a couple of haters in that school that would have been like,
yeah,
present. But
this is in like first person. Yeah. So I don't know if those haters would have like gone up to her face and be like, go back to like your island. Like, I don't think, I mean, we have Mason.
There's one hater in this story.
Royce's brother.
He's a doozy.
Oh God. He's such a train wreck of a person. Not
he's like yeah, just a giant boner head. He's Royce's older brother, who is, I guess just the family screw up, I guess.
Well, he's not really a screw up because he was a national scholar as well. He got into Harvard. He's super intelligent. It's just that he's a douchebag of a person.
He's a giant bully.
Yeah, he's a giant bully who is overcompensating for the lack of love that he received from his parents.
And he does so by taking it out on his brother, Royce, who is Jasmine's boyfriend. And I guess, like, yeah, he spends the entire time trying to make her feel bad so to make him feel bad.
Yeah, him feel good. Right. I mean, the whole thing with Mason and Royce, their relationship is that Mason, he kind of abuses his privilege. He knows that he's rich. He knows that his dad is, like has power in the government, and he thinks that he can just have anything that he wants. It's just all about collecting at that point. And like the book mentions that, like when you're raised that way, you don't really see the other side. Like you just kind of have this mindset to just collect and just to be the best of everything.
Yeah. You it's the opposite. What's the opposite? It's, instead of feeling like you're owed stuff, he feels like he deserves
everything,
which is a little different too.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Royston and the Blakeleys, who are like the besides Jasmine's family is the other secondary characters of the story. Well, okay.
I would argue that Jasmine's family have more of a role in this book than the Blakeleys, because they're just more present.
Right.
Like I mentioned at book club that like there's obviously like a contrast between the two. Like Jasmine's family is like very like involved with her life to a point where they're like, oh, like where are you going? Like you're seeing a boy? Don't you need a chaperone? Whereas like Blakeley's parents are like, here, take the car and just do whatever you want. I mean, we had book club members who are Filipino, and they mentioned that, like, while not every Filipino family is that conservative and that strict about romantic relationships, they did mention that family is a big deal. Like, they, like, it matters quite a lot.
Yeah.
Family first and then your needs later.
And extended family too. You have the grandma that's not related but is still the grandma.
Lola. Yeah.
That's true. I guess the Blakely, especially the Blakely parents, so the mother and the congressman, were mainly there as like plot devices, I feel like, to move the plot along. The only person you really spend a lot of time with is Royce, the boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Or the romantic second lead, I guess, or romantic lead.
He's the romantic lead.
Yeah. And he is, you know, totally the, like, the sympathetic good boy. Like, he's a good boy.
Because if you compare him to Mason, Mason has always, like, been on top of his game. And he, you know, he kind of tries to get his family's approval by kind of acting out and doing terrible things to get attention. Whereas like with Royce, he
does whatever
he was, his parents want. Like he tries to compensate by like following his like dad's orders, interning for him. And, you know, he's dyslexic. So he kind of feels like he's not as good as his brother. Yeah. So he feels like he has to like work harder. So very, very different.
So his role, I guess we should talk about his role as part of the story. right?
Yeah.
So as a romantic lead, his role is to be on her mind every single paragraph of every single page. He's, you know, he is...
I think, okay, like, taking him out of the romantic context, like, he is that white boy who, like, who doesn't really have an opinion on immigration and who's just like, oh, well, it's like, it has nothing to do with me, so why should I care?
Until it does.
Until it does.
Yeah.
And he's, like, kind of like the person who's just like, wait and see. Or like, oh, I don't want to like offend anybody, so I'm just not going to say anything.
Yeah.
Which we've seen a lot of in this past election season and just now, like people who are choosing not to say anything.
Right.
Say anything and are like, nope, like not here for the politics, just.
Yeah. And then it's not until like the politics affect something that he cares about that he like gets involved.
Yeah. So like I would say that as much as he changes Jasmine changes him as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because like before, like Jasmine wasn't really into social justice as well. Like right. She was like, I'm gonna be a doctor, whereas like where Royce is just like, you know, you're really passionate about this and you're like very organized and articulate, like I feel like you could be a really good
lawyer,
advocate, or yeah, a lawyer. And she does like make that decision towards the end. She's like, oh, I want to go into this because this is a terrible thing that I had to go through and I don't want other people to go through with it.
Yeah. And then, you know, she she also encourages him to be more confident too because of his own self-esteem issues. And he also, you know, like as the reality of deportation comes closer and closer for Jasmine, you know, you start going through, all right, what are our options? Let's get married.
Yeah, I was, right, like, I knew from the moment Royce showed up that that was going to happen. Because I was like, oh, this is a book on, like, undocumented immigrants, and she's a teenage girl. Like, of course this is going to happen at one point. I'm really glad they didn't go through with it.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad that Jasmine's best friend, Kayla, I think that was her name.
Yeah, Kayla.
Like, Kayla seemed... like, she was kind of a mess for most of the book. Like, she kind of made really irresponsible decisions and was very emotional. But in that one decision where, like...
Yeah.
Like, it really mattered. She was just like, no, you guys are kind of young. And, like, what if, like, you guys get divorced? And what if, like, you're making a mistake?
Yeah.
So, dodged a bullet there. But...
it's... yeah, so, like, she breaks off the engagement... which is the opposite of one of... So they also had an almost sex scene in this book.
Yeah.
In Royce's Porsche. And that was when he kind of pulled the brakes on it. So these are some really real responsible kids here.
Too responsible.
Very responsible kids.
Should have made more mistakes. I was flabbergasted when she was driving them. Like, she was driving Royce and Kayla, uh-huh, who were drunk.
Yeah.
And she had to, like, drive them home, but she didn't have her learner's permit.
Yeah.
And, like, the cop came, and the cop didn't even check her license and her registration. Like, I was just like, what cop does that? I mean, it wouldn't have helped with her getting her citizenship.
Would have been game over for her.
It would have been game over for her, but I just wish that, like, I don't know, that moment seemed a little bit too out of reach for me. I mean, it would have been like nice if like the policeman was just like, okay, you don't have your license with you, you seem like a responsible kid, I'll let you go. Like at least like one thing. But
yeah, but yeah, so I guess putting the cap on to Jasmine's arc, she ends the book, or she ends the story, or she enters into the last act being more confident or more aggressive in her, like, she's, instead of waiting for whatever happens, instead of being passive,
mm-hmm,
with this, her situation, she starts to take action, telling people about her situation, not keeping everything bottled in, and also apparently threatening her lawyer with a bad Yelp review.
Oh yeah, that. And like constantly calling,
yeah,
the congressman, being like, hey, get on it.
Yeah.
I might be deported. This is kind of important. which is like nice, because in the beginning of the book, it feels like because she works so hard, she like believes that she deserves, not deserves, but like, because I worked hard, good things will happen, mm-hmm. or like things will work out.
Yeah.
Even with the Reformation Bill, like the immigration reform bill, yeah. she's like, oh, it will work out.
It's a meritocracy. Like, I deserve it. So like, I'm one of the good ones.
Yeah. I'm one right? of the good ones. But, what she realizes is that like there are thousands of cases just like her. Like, what makes her so special that she should get special treatment?
Right.
And she realizes that like it's not something that is just handed to you because you're a good person. You actually have to work for it. You actually have to like be aggressive and fight for it. Because like you see that difference with her and her dad, because her dad's super negative and he's just yeah. like, oh, it's not going to work out. We need to like pack so we can go to the Philippines without like
yeah her dad was the source of bad dad jokes and pessimism
yeah
or realism as he puts it
realism yeah well it's like you know her dad he realizes like their chances of getting citizenship or visas and yeah. their chances of getting deported but he doesn't really do anything about it. Because, like, he wasn't, like, it was the mom who said, oh, let's get a lawyer. Whereas, like, he yeah. was just like, let's just not do anything and wait until either we get kicked out or, or like, another bill passes. Like, he's yeah. more of like, oh, let's just stay where we are.
Yeah. And for Jasmine, that's just wasn't an option because she didn't want to have to work, like, janitorial jobs.
Yeah, I mean, it yeah. was an option for her because she wants to go to college. She yeah. has all these deadlines.
So, we're just jumping all over the place, but let's.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, the second big conflict was so she finally, after the hearing, their family is ordered to be deported by the judge, by the indifferent judge. And the judge, as you said, made mention of like, well, I don't see any letters from congressmen or important people. So you obviously aren't important. So I don't need to listen to you. And then she goes and asks Royce to talk to his dad, this guy who is the champion of killing this immigration bill that would have solved her problems. Turns out to be, oh yeah, sure. I'll help you. They try to push through a private bill,
mm-hmm.
Which would grant her family visas.
Yeah.
And then basically that gets put into motion until it's leaked.
To the media.
To the media.
And
so
they're like, you're a two-faced politician. You say one thing, but you do the other.
Yeah, so it gets picked up by Politico and the mainstream news. Oh, Fox News. And then so he... His office has to back off yeah. and back out. And so another chance of getting citizenship or getting another chance of getting visas vanishes.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is when she just says, screw it. I'm just going to enjoy the rest of my time.
Yeah, I think like Jasmine's arc overall is going from someone who, you know, is very passive and then gets very active. And then like towards the end, it's just like, she, you know, she gives up for maybe a chapter or so. And yeah. then she kind of picks it back up. She's like, nope, can't give up. Kind of got to keep going. Like yeah. it's,
well, that's when the marriage proposal happens. Cause that's like the last ditch effort. And then she backs out. And then that's when you find out that, oh, the jerk brother is the one that leaked the story.
Yeah.
He comes back in, is a jerk, and then beats up his little brother.
In the rain.
And then breaks down because Royce still loves him. I felt like there wasn't enough redeeming qualities for me to feel sorry for Mason.
Yeah, I mean, he was such a sleaze.
Like, there was like the picture of him and Royce as kids
mm-hmm.
in the room that shows, oh, they were friends once. Maybe. But yeah, it was like, I was like, man, this guy is like, he's just mean for no reason. I guess there's a reason.
It doesn't mean it's a good reason. but I do want to like, I know we're jumping all over the place. But I want to go to when Jasmine went to DC
Right.
And she's like, she meets the president.
Yeah. Did you read that in Obama's voice? Because I sure did.
I definitely did. It's not, it doesn't mention like what the president looks like other than he looks presidential. Yeah. But I'm just like, oh, it's Obama.
It's like, totally Obama.
It's totally Obama. And then like he mentions Kenya and I'm just like, it's Obama. It's Obama.
That was really cool just because like I lived in DC for 3 years. So it's kind of interesting for them to describe, you know,
like
a very DC scene, which is getting led around the Capitol building, getting, you know,
shaking hands with like senators and
it's
well, it's like a glimpse into what could happen to Jasmine if she was a citizen, if she could accept the scholarship.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's hard because it's just like, oh, my God, everything I worked so hard for and it's just slipping out of my grasp.
So we talked about Jasmine's arc. I know I mentioned this earlier, but I think it's just really cool that this story is being told.
Mm-hmm.
It's important.
It's, yeah, like we mentioned, it's super relevant to what's happening now.
Which is putting a human face on the stigmatized, like illegal alien, undocumented immigrant.
Yeah, I think when people think like illegal immigrant, undocumented immigrant, like a certain picture forms, like a stereotype of like, oh, these people who, who are like farmers and they like sneaked in by like. Like through like fake floorboards or whatever, like it, like there's like this image that pops up, but really it could be anyone. It could be someone who's as high achieving as Jasmine. It could just be.
Yeah. And it's, these type of stories are more common than you think, you know, and it affects different communities. Like Jasmine's family is Filipino. I know quite a few Korean Americans who are, some have similar situations too, who are dreamers or whose family came. And you know, it's a byproduct of both our open borders and our capitalist systems, where you know you have situations where people come here based on false promises, or and then are either stuck or you know decide to stick around to make it go. Because people come to America for the opportunity.
Yeah.
Right? It's a place where you can, like, because we're a capitalist society, because we're, you know, on paper, a meritocracy, you know, there's the idea that if you come to America, you work hard, you will succeed. Like, the American dream. Yeah. Right?
Actually, like, now that you mentioned that, like, you meet the other national scholarship kids.
And
like,
DC, yeah.
Okay, yeah, like, so, like, Jasmine, obviously, she, like, worked her butt off. Her family's poor, so she, like, definitely got there through merit. But then all the other kids are, like, rich kids from boarding school, and their parents are in the government. So it's, like,
They're Maryland kids. They're probably, like, yeah.
I mean, like, I'm not saying that they didn't work hard for their achievements, but it's, like, they had it a little bit more accessible to them, you know? Like they had good schooling, they had private tutors, they had
parents with connections.
Yeah, so it's like, so you see two sides to it where it's like, oh, there is meritocracy in a sense, but there's also like, oh, people who got in through connections and money.
Yeah. As people like to say, privilege.
Privilege, yes.
I think say what you will about how this, like, this genre might not be something I would seek out normally. I like that it was put out, and I like that people can read it and look at it. And I know you mentioned that, and you scan the reviews of this book when you're choosing it.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of the people who really loved it are like teen white girls, which is, you know, obviously that's the
demographic.
Target.
But also,
it's good that they're reading this. They're seeing this. You know, it's a good. I think it's a good primer on immigrant issues, and you know, if it really affects you, then you can, you know, read more, because there's so much more about this stuff online and everywhere, because it's such a hot issue, especially now with, you know, all the immigration stuff going on. You know, who knows, they might like it because of the hot love story, you know.
I mean, that's the bait, you know.
Yeah.
But I highlighted some parts in the book, not the romance parts, but like there were some parts about just what it means to be a kid who immigrated here with like their parents, because I'm an immigrant too. I immigrated to the States when I was three. And there's a long passage that I highlighted. I'm not sure if I'm going to read all of it, but I'm just going to go for it and you can edit it later.
Oh, it's all staying in.
Okay. So this is in Jasmine perspective. I read somewhere that a lot of kids of immigrants grow up quickly and are given more responsibility than other kids. Their parents tend to depend on them, mostly because the kids can speak the language better and can act as a conduit to mainstream American society. The child becomes the parent and the parent the child. I feel a little like that now, like I'm older and wiser than my mom. If I do go to college, my life will become even more different from hers. If I don't go, I know I'll never live up to her dreams for me. It seems like any path I take will lead us further apart. Maybe that's part of what being a daughter means. Maybe that's how the children of all immigrants feel. It's just like it hits it. It just nails it.
I mean, that's the experience of the 1 to 2 generation, like first and second generation, and even first and 1.5 generation immigrant, which is the culture you grow up in is going to be different than the one your parents grew up with. And so every step you take within this culture, maturing wise, you're like getting further and further away from where what your parents understand.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, my parents came here with my parents came here because my dad's work. Like my dad had a work visa, and then we stayed here long enough that we were able to get green cards. Mm-hmm. But when I was 16 years old, my dad was offered a promotion, but it was back in Korea. And the company wanted all of us to move back. And I remember this conversation pretty clearly because I like thought my father was insane for asking this, but he asked me, he's like, what would you think if we went back to Korea?
When you were 16?
When I was 16.
Oh, that's the worst.
And I just like looked at him weirdly and I was like, why would you like, why? And he said, oh, because, you know, because of my work, we might have to move back. And I like pretty much told him like, if I go back, what is left for me? Like it's not like I can transition into the school system in Korea as easily. Like, yeah. I don't speak the language well enough. Their education system's different. They learn different things. It was a really odd moment for me because, like, for my parents, I don't think they realized that they were going to stay in America for this long. Mm-hmm. Like, I think always in the back of their mind, they thought that we were going to go back to Korea. Like, our stay in America is temporary. Mm-hmm. And because my parents did a fairly good job, like, raising me with Korean culture instilled in me. like, I went to Korean school. I went to, like, cram schools. Like, I was raised very traditionally. Like, I think they thought that I could just, like, assimilate back into Korean society, like, seamlessly. But, like, I had to explain to my dad. I'm like, no. Like, like, I know I don't have citizenship right now, but, like, I'm American. Like, I've always been American. And it's not something that you can just define by citizenship.
Yeah.
And, like, that was the main reason why, like, my dad was like, okay, I guess we're staying because, like, you have no future if you go to Korea. Like, how will you go to college? But
so this was back in Atlanta?
Yeah, this was back in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. I remember I was like, it was for like a month. Like, we went back and forth on it. Like, my dad's like, but what if we sent you to international school in Korea? And I'm just like, it's still not the same. Not doing that. Like, I'd rather you leave me behind and, like, I do my schooling here.
Yeah. It's when you're a teen, major change is, like, so much worse.
Yeah, because, like, literally it felt like I had no more future. I was just I'm not going to have an American high school diploma. Like, I probably won't be able to go to American college.
Yeah.
It was, like, a really big deal. And I can't possibly imagine. I was not a good student, so like I can't possibly imagine like how someone like Jasmine would feel, where they like reach the highest honor possible,
right,
for like their academic career, and like be forced to give that up.
And I guess this is a good opportunity to talk about just, you know, these stories. It's not fiction. It's based in like what's happening in real life.
I mean, it happens. And like, honestly, when I was reading this book, I thought it was really optimistic. I was like, wow, everything is just working
everything,
out great.
So let's, that's a good thing to end our discussion on. It's just like, everything gets kind of tied up in a, like a neat little bow, which is like, you know, it's YA. It's a hopeful, happy ending, which is fine, which is great. You know, she makes up with her boyfriend. All her friends are back, you know, in stable relationships. She gets the cases dropped against her family. They all get visas, and are
she
on
gets
path
like a
to...
special visa because like
she gets a full ride to Stanford thanks to the old lady
Millie
friend that she makes. Everything works out, and I think that's something that our book club also pointed out, was that everyone she talked to about her situation was so positive about it, which I guess it's good that she has such great friends that don't flinch at this type of thing. You know, they get donuts and the whole entire cheerleading team hugs. You know what, that's also something that works out perfectly, is so in the middle of the book, she's so distressed about boy issues and deportation issues that she, you know, messes up at regionals for the cheerleading competition, and they get second place instead of first. But then the first place gets disqualified because they use a choreographer, which is the plot of
Bring It On. Oh my God.
By the way,
I was thinking that too when I was reading it. I was like, oh my God.
And then they spend a chapter of them going to nationals and winning the national title, which is like her, like another thing that happens to work out for her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, like I know we're like wrapping things up, but I thought it was really weird that her best friend Kayla was dating Mason. Did you thought that was really like abrupt and weird that like
it was weird in that
I felt like that
it seemed a little problematic.
Like it seemed like that part didn't need to be included in the story, and it would have still worked out fine. Like Mason's a jerk; he would have leaked the news about her getting a private bill anyway. So I thought that was a little bit strange and out of character for her best friend. But whatever, that's like a little pet peeve that I had when I was reading it.
Well, you know, it's like we said, it's a relatively drama free.
But isn't that kind of nice, though, that it's drama-free compared to, like, what's happening today? Like, where, like, some people are... Like, I was really surprised with all the news that's been coming out with the protests at JFK and, like, how there are people with green cards, people who are legal permanent residents here who are getting detained and threatened with deportations. Just like, wait, what?
Like, so many, like, external things that could have like really made this into a more harrowing experience, but you know, most of the drama came from internally. I mean, the most drama from like other kids is from Mason, the jerk brother, and like the queen bee in DC.
Yeah, like I did have like a lot of like mixed feelings about this book, but it did make me think a lot to like my high school experience. Because Atlanta has a big Korean American community, like believe it or not, we're not like all farmers who are like y'all, but there's a good percentage of that community who are undocumented, and like I know a couple of people who were kind of in the same situation as Jasmine. They got good grades, they did everything right, and they find out in the middle of high school that they don't have visas, they don't have they don't have green cards. And, you know, it made me remember, like, how much privilege I had as, like, a high schooler who had legal residence, like permanent residency in the States. And, like, how, quite frankly, like, how I didn't even think about my classmates or, like, or like the problems that they were going through. And that kind of makes me, that kind of colors me as like a terrible person.
No, I mean, but
no, that like like I remember I like went back to Atlanta like after like my first year of college, like out of state. And one of my summer jobs was to like help people write essays for college applications. Mm-hmm. And like I had like at least three Korean kids who were in that same situation where they're like they're like writing their college essays, but they kind of lose motivation halfway. They're like, what's the point?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not gonna be able to pay for the college I even get accepted to. Like, it's
all the opportunities and possibilities that doing really good in school gets you all of a sudden is closed.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. Like, I had so my college roommate was in the same, had the same situation too. And I always wondered why he was such like, he was like a total hustler. Like, he was, you know, running a bookstore on Amazon, selling t-shirts, printing t-shirts in the garage, like total entrepreneur. Like, he started a gelato store. He opened a gelato store after graduation. And, you know, it's because like he had to pay for his own way. Like,
yeah,
all his tuition, everything was his. Like, it was on him to put himself through school. And it's good that the story is out there. It's good that people are reading it. And I hope it leads them to be more empathetic.
Yeah, definitely, like, more empathy. We really need it at this time. Like, more empathy. And also, like, I think, like, for us, like, because we're older, reading in the perspective of, like, an 18-year-old, I think that's also important, because a lot of times we brush off young people saying like, oh, you're being overdramatic. Like you, like you don't know what real life is. Like, just wait until the real problems hit. But
yeah,
like, I think it also reminds older readers like us that young people, you know, they have their own issues, and we should take it with some gravity.
I will say, this is the first time I've seen texting portrayed in books.
Oh.
And Snapchat being
oh yeah, referenced. Snapchat was a first.
I will say, there was no fire emoji, so obviously this is outdated. But
I mean, it's outdated by the fact that, you know, the president in this book is
that's
Obama.
True. That's true. Who knew? Like, yeah, hopefully Jasmine got her citizenship before this administration
came
along.
I hope her visa
along.
Didn't get revoked.
I know. That would, like, we should, like, revisit Jasmine.
Sequel.
1 year later. Something in between.
That was the name of her essay, by the way.
Yeah, her personal national essay. On that note, that'll do it for our discussion of Something in Between by Melissa De La Cruz. Check it out. It's available on Amazon, Kindle, and bookstores everywhere, if there is a bookstore near you. What's up for next month?
Next month, we are reading Sorcerer to the Crown by Zen Cho. It's a historical fantasy, and it's set in Regency England, where there are magicians and pretty much cool magic stuff. And it's written by a Malaysian-British author.
Awesome. So, interesting.
First non-American.
And our first fantasy.
No, right? Not our first fantasy. We've read different versions of fantasy. We've read Heroine Complex was urban fantasy. Monstrous is sci-fi steampunk fantasy. Not steampunk, but in that kind of aesthetic. And then this is our first.
I guess, yeah.
I mean, it's our first historical fantasy. It's set in like a real historic era. So... historical
I'm not
fiction,
a literary,
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll see how it goes.
I'm interested. Yeah, check that out. You know, find it in your local library, go to your local bookstore, get it on Kindle, and read up. Our discussion will probably take place first week of March. Just because it's a short month in February.
As always, feel free to join the Goodreads forums.
And also like our Facebook page, because that's where we'll set up our meetup information. Next month, we're going to try to do an online meetup in addition to our local meetup in LA. So keep an eye out for that. It'll probably be via Google Hangout. And I think those have a limit of 10 people. So hopefully we get a full house.
Yeah, and if there's too many people, then we'll figure it out somehow.
And yeah, if you're enjoying our podcast, please give us a rating and review on iTunes. It really helps us out. And also share it with anybody you know who might want to take part in our book club. I'm really enjoying reading more, reading different things.
I bet you never thought that you would read a YA contemporary romance.
You know what? I thought I'd be reading YA. I just, you know.
Thought it would be like Hunger Games?
Yeah. I didn't intend on reading about boys so much, but it's interesting. Is this what girls think about? Maybe. No, I know.
On that note,
thanks for listening to Books and Boba. We'll see you all next time.
Happy reading.